This is Ben Crenshaw. You're listening to Radio Golf Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, meine Damen und Herren, dear listeners, Mark Hoganer here with Frank Förster. This episode of The Golf Show is once again in English. Avid listeners will have noticed we took a break last week, but we have not been resting. After a fully packed winter season of writers, association officials, PGA officials, broadcasters, pros and publishers, we are extremely happy to have some equally interesting people lined up for the next few weeks. We'll be welcoming a German publisher, an American author, and an English broadcaster. Let us not forget, we'll be doing loads of great stuff around the Masters too. So tons to look forward to in the next few weeks. But now to today's guest, someone I'm especially excited about, mostly because he does and knows about fascinating stuff I haven't got the slightest idea of. Frank, would you be so kind?
Yes, thank you, Mark. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. I am very much looking forward to this hour, as I imagine many of you are as well. On the show today, we have Mr. Sam Hahn, the CEO of Lab Golf. They build putters, and it's not just any putters, as I'm sure we'll find out. And whenever a new club hits the market, especially one where you see the words patented technology, one might wonder who on tour uses these things if they work so well. And I think that might be a good entry point for us, because these flat sticks are not only rolling balls on various tours, they also win. Sam, welcome to Radio Golf Show. You guys had a big win yesterday. Congratulations to that. Please tell us about the nicest guy in golf and who else is wielding the Mez or the Link or the Directed Force for a living on the tours. Welcome.
Well, we are quite a few guys. Well, first off, thank you guys very much for having me. And I'm sorry that you guys had a blank radio hour last week. Forgive me, I was under the weather a bit, but short of a few sniffles and coughs, I think we should be able to make it through this hour.
I'm sure.
Yes, you guys lucked out. It was, to be having this podcast today after yesterday's events is pretty serendipitous. It was an incredible afternoon for us. For those that don't know, Charles Howell was yesterday's winner on the LIV Tour with a legitimate virtuoso performance, not just on the greens, but ball striking as well. His ball striking was amazing, and he left himself a bunch of putts inside 15 feet. And one of the interesting things, it was a statement I got from it was actually Adam Scott a few years ago. Adam and I were sort of debriefing his 2019 Masters, which was the first major we'd ever been a part of. Adam was using the Directed Force. He was actually using a short version, was leading the tournament after 2 days. According to him, it was, some of the best ball striking of his entire career. And he was just leaving himself 12 footer after 12 footer after 12 footer. And we were talking about it. He said something very interesting to me, which is that when you're leaving yourself 12 feet all day, they don't get easier. They get harder. the more and more pressure mounts, particularly if you don't see a couple go in early, you start pressing and forcing it. And so fast forward to yesterday, to Charles, it was the same situation where he was just flagging it. He was hitting it so good. And these putts weren't just going in, like they were going in the middle. And you knew that they were going in the middle the second they came off the face, and in many cases before they even came off the face. Yeah, just amazing stuff. He's been an absolute gentleman to us. I can't overstate how nice he's been. He even went, I guess it was last month during the PGA show. I wasn't there, but my sales director and one of our sales associates was there. After the show, they did a demo day at Isleworth Country Club, where Charles is a member. And Charles and his kid took my guys out to play golf at Isleworth. Like, you know,
right.
That's not the kind of thing you generally see from a tour player. So what a gentleman, what a performance, and what a day here at the factory.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't imagine what it must be like to watch it. But you mentioned Adam Scott. You mentioned Adam Scott, who was walking around with one of your sticks, correct?
Yes, quite a few of them, actually.
And I read somewhere, I heard that our very own, and somebody who's been on the show, Bernard Langer, is also... has a couple. He might not be using them. He's still winning.
He's got a couple. Yeah. He's Bernhard is my goodness, what a guy. One of the interesting sort of views I get of people and their putting prowess is on you know, the putting green. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is when, you know, we typically go out there to try and help the guys out. There isn't necessarily a direct correlation between the guys that you see blow your mind on a putting green versus how they do, you know, out in competition. But Bernhard is one of the few who will blow your mind on a putting green. He's one of a few guys. I've never seen anything. He's on a very, very short list of guys that I just couldn't even believe what I was seeing. Like, doesn't matter really what the length is on a putting green, he does not miss the second putt ever, and usually makes the first one. He is incredibly efficient. And the stroke, you know, we've all seen it. It looks a little funny. He gets a little jabby sometimes, and it doesn't seem to matter. He rolls it end over end perfectly and makes a ton of putts. He's been kind enough to test our stuff. I think the closest we got, he was traveling with one of our directed force broomsticks for a while, but he had trouble getting used to the onset, the way that our, you know, putter works. The shaft goes in the head quite a bit behind the face, which for, you know, somebody that's hit as many pure and perfect putts with his two ball as he has, yeah, is quite an adjustment. But we're still in touch. We say hi every once in a while. Yeah. And one of these days, if we get something with the shaft a little closer to the face, maybe he'll give it a go.
Wouldn't that be something if you brought him back to the short putter? That would be a story.
I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Mark gave him the yips.
I think we would sooner see Adam in a short putter than we would see Bernhard.
I'm not really sure I gave him the yips.
We asked him. Yeah, you kind of gave him. Yeah, you said.
But the thing is, I think the most interesting thing about Bernhard and his putting is not only his precision, what you mentioned, Sam, is that the immense and tremendous hard work he's always put into his game, and especially his putting. Because it has been a, how do you call it? It's like a chore, because, you know, he's been fighting the yips from the beginning. And as we talked, it was really nice, because he said, like, you know, I could go out onto the putting green and I'll practice all afternoon, but as soon as I get on the first green, it's something completely different in my head, which I thought was really interesting. Can we go two steps back for the audience who aren't, you know, like engineers and haven't read up on lab technology yet? I gather it's lie angle balance. I think that's the
correct.
Right. So would you care to elaborate on that? You just give us the big beats and how it works, because I've watched some really impressive videos about, you know, guys with the on your homepage with faces not right, turning, and then throwing them around this
thing. The revealer.
It looks like it's being, you know, it's like
yeah, the revealer. You know, for your listeners, I'll do my best to explain it. It's a bit of a challenge to explain just through spoken word. I definitely encourage your listeners to check out labgolf.com so you can see the demonstration with this device we call the revealer. And what the revealer does is it exposes the truth about what putters actually do. If you're obsessed enough to be listening to an hour-long podcast about golf, chances are you've heard the terms toe hang and face balanced. And prior to my involvement with Lab, I subscribed to the same narrative that most of us do, which is that a toe hang putter is good for a particular kind of stroke, and a face balanced putter is good for a particular kind of stroke. And even further on face balanced, I think a lot of us were given the impression that a face balanced putter, meaning a putter that if you rest it on your finger points towards the sky, I think most of us were under the impression that that putter is sort of self-squaring, you know, that they tell you that it's good for a stroke that goes straight back and straight through, which is a whole other giant pile of nonsense. But face balance putters do not stay square at all. And so what's interesting about, you know, sort of the comment threads on our commercials and on these revealer videos is, how many people outwardly admit that they assumed that their face balanced putter was doing what ours does. And what ours does is quite literally stays square by itself. It in fact actually is seeking square. So we have done a whole bunch of super nerdy physics science-y stuff around how we shaft, balance, and weight a putter to make it so that there's no fight throughout the stroke. Some of us more aware than others have all felt a fight.
Usually fight between the toe and the heel of the putter, or
just a fight with the putter. You know, you're sitting all there right. on the putting green, and you're you know, maybe you just had a crappy round, and you sit there and you're like, okay, if I just take this putter perfectly straight back and perfectly straight through, the ball should roll towards my target, and then you pull the putter back, and it, you know, falls to the inside, or the, you know, face tries to open on you, or just feels like the putter is not corresponding with your intention. What Lab does is it allows the putter to correspond with your intention. Before we started this podcast, you mentioned something, you know, about the sort of mystique around putting. And in my estimation, the mystique is, you know, is this sort of intellectual conflict between the fact that the hole is right there. It's 4 feet away. It's twice the size of a golf ball. You're on a relatively flat piece of earth that's smooth. Why is it so hard to get the ball in the hole? And it doesn't match similar actions like darts or pool or shooting a basketball. Because the reasoning, I think, is because in those other sports, you don't have to manage the instrument. You know that a dart is going to fly where you release it. Whereas with a putter, the putter's not necessarily going where you stroke it, because you have this fight, this torque fight. The putter's trying to open or close or do whatever it's trying to do based on its particular torque profile. And so what, you know, our customers see, and now, you know, starting to get some tour players starting to see, is that when you don't have to manage the face and you don't have to control the torque, what's left is that you get to be more athletic, much like throwing darts. You get to react to your target instead of this kind of hyper focus on managing the club face. So it frees you up. It allows you to roll the ball with a lot more freedom than other putters have allowed in the past. I feel like I've stumped you guys.
No. Because I think basically what's just happening is that you have like these two people sitting there going like, how many putters have I already bought in my life? How many times did I really feel comfortable with that thing in my hands? I loved it. It looked great, but it was, you know, it had a toe hang like that, and it was Japanese made or whatever, and it was came from this forgery, and it's beautiful, and I want it, and I want it so badly to work for me that it will probably never work, and then I'd putt it off the green. And that's basically probably what's just you know, the blank expressions in our faces, like,
oh man,
where was this other thing I bought 1999? It must be somewhere in the cellar. You know, that was probably what I was seeing. You know, I've got this huge monstrous thing from Ping, the docks, you know, the 17.
Oh, I remember the dock. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a dock. You can use it as an umbrella. It's great.
Yeah.
If you keep the head cover on. So yeah, and that was basically, and I'm also trying to process it because it does feel like an extremely promising concept that you're not going to fight with technology. You know, as we say, if you're not going to fight the thing that's in your hand, and I think it's something everyone's, you know, everyone who's had problems putting has always had, or at least once had the feeling he's got a living snake in his hand because he's fighting the torque or the toe, the heel, or whatever.
That's exactly what it is.
And so that turns into this love and hate relationship. And that's why you just saw two really blank faces staring into the air, thinking about all these putters living in the darkness of our cellars.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it,
and
it
you
does
keep
that.
Them,
I mean,
don't
it blows
you? Don't
people's
sell them.
Minds. It blows people's minds, you know, especially because, like I said, there's a, you know, most people, even, you know, even avid golfers, like, golf isn't their life. You know, they go out on Saturday and they play with their buddies. And then once the round is open, the clubs go in the trunk and they don't think about it until next week. And, you know, I think most people are actually under the impression that their putters already do stay square by themselves. And so it's definitely eye opening for a lot of people to hear. And then certainly the experience of using it by and large seems to prove as profound as hearing about a self squaring putter. And it's so funny, you know, like we have a self squaring putter. Like, it's a no brainer. You know, it's like and it's so funny how people online and on our commercials and the comment threads, you know, fight the concept. And I always just think about, like, well, what if it was the other way around? Like, what if we were first? What if, you know, putters through history
always been self squaring?
We're lying balanced, and then some dude came around, you know, with a putter that's got the toe hanging down, and is like, no, this one's better. Like, you'd think that you'd rightfully think that they were absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
You know, now that it's, that, you know, it, being that it's not that way, and we've all seen, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of tournaments and major championships won with torquing putters, we have this uphill battle of fighting what we think is a pretty logical, you know, statement, which I say in the commercials, is in one hand is a putter that stays square by itself, and in the other one is one that doesn't. Which one do you want? It's not difficult.
Can you just, for as short as possible, tell us about the physics behind that? You know, how does it work? You know, because there is, I don't want to bore everyone with this very technical question, but how does it really work? Do you, because you do a sort of fitting, don't you? You know, you take my body, my 193 centimeters, and then you'll measure my hands, you'll, you know, see, but how then do you measure the amount of torque and anti-torque, or whatever you would call it, to match my to my body? And would I be able to putt with your putter? Would your putter stay square with Frank, or would it just act like my Japanese girlfriend over there in the corner that hasn't been played for weeks?
So you sort of have two different questions there. Is how do the putters work, and then how does our fitting work? And they are related. In as layman's terms, regarding the physics of how it works, we have as you mentioned in the intro, a patented technology that has us with a very specific relationship with the center of mass of the putter and where the shaft is inserted. So that's sort of step one in getting a putter lie-angle balance, is where we locate the shaft. That location will change ever so slightly based on the length, lie, weight, grip. We're getting actually much better at figuring out a way to use other variables besides moving the shaft around in these little, you know, micro amounts. But basically, we stick the shaft in a very, very, very specific place. And then we have a process that has us using all of those weights that you see on the bottom of the putter. Those are not just decoration. Those are not for swing weight. Those are all some stringently engineered screws that all have varying weights. The breakdown of those weights start at 2 grams all the way up to 18 grams. They're made of either aluminum, steel, or tungsten. And then even the 2 gram separation occasionally isn't enough to sort of fine tune the balance. And so even beyond that, we use tungsten powder underneath those weights. And we do a bunch of tests to make sure that each putter is perfectly balanced. And then the final test is, you know, what you guys have seen in the commercials is the revealer. So every single putter, after it goes through the process of getting, balanced and, you know, sitting perfectly toe up, then we have to put it in the revealer to make sure that even though it's sitting square in the address position, that it stays square throughout the stroke. And so that revealer is not just a demonstration device. It's also our, you know, our QC. That's how we make sure that everything's done correctly. And then, per your question about the fitting, will my putter work for you? Yes. Relative to the Japanese putter in the corner, even if the putter, so say, you know, my lie angle is 67, which relative to standard is actually quite flat. If you were more upright, say at 72, you could set up with my putter with the heel off the ground, and it's still going to have infinitely less torque than any putter that you've ever used. Is it going to, in that more upright position than the position it was balanced for, be absolutely positively torque free? No. However, the amount of torque added by playing it in a heel up position, there's probably a half a dozen guys on the planet that can actually feel it.
So it's tiny. It's tiny. It's like
absolutely.
You're talking scientific measurements, aren't you? You're not talking like I would notice it.
However, the way that these putters set up, and particularly the big one, the directed force, you want the lie good. You want a proper fitting because one of the wonderful benefits of it is that it's so big and so flat on the bottom that you can, you know, really use setting the putter flush on the ground as an opportunity to have a really consistent setup time after time.
Yeah, this is. I'm a guy. You know, 33 putts around is a good round for me, and that'll be with 33 different ball positions and 33 different strokes I put on the putter.
That was me 6 years ago.
Well, I do want to talk about Sam Hahn, the player, also a little bit, but so many different things. Number one, the first thing I want to say, I mean, this feels to me like. Like what happened with Carsten Solheim and Ping so many years ago, and people had exactly or very similar reactions to what he was doing with his. I mean, I think it's rather momentous. I mean, you are, you know, on the Golf Digest hot list, the new Link One putter, and all this stuff. You just mentioned the PGA Show. Did you exhibit there?
We didn't this year. We intend to next year. We just had sent some guys for some recon.
For recon. I like it. Very cool. Obviously, the next question is, you know, if it does remind me of what Solheim did with Ping, what is this work for irons? When is Lab making irons? Is that in the...
unfortunately, the USGA and the Royal and Ancient will not allow for anybody to stick a shaft in the center of mass. However, there is applicable... are you guys familiar with gears? It's a testing platform. It's kind of where they put all the little sensors all over your body, and you make a swing and it makes a 3D model of you.
It's a tight suit, and they put cables.
Like the K vest.
Yeah. It's kind of same family as K vest, but yes, okay. you take these little sensors all over everything, not just your body, but the club as well. Yeah. There's a guy named Michael Neff who runs, I think he's the CEO of the company or higher up. Anyway, they've done some incredible research on shafts, heads, all that stuff, to help understand, the impact of torque throughout the swing. Now they're looking at it from a different lens than we are. But 100%, not that we can necessarily lie angle balance a driver, but there's certainly a whole world to explore as far as how to torque fit, irons, drivers, things like that.
You could
lessen it, or perhaps increase it depending upon where, it might benefit the player. Striking a golf ball at 120 miles an hour is a very different act than hitting a putt. Consequently, you have to operate inside the rules. And like I said, you can't stick a shaft in the center of mass of a golf club. It needs to be, out towards the heel. And so, but there are things that could be done. The trick, becomes, managing where the sweet spot is, because if you move too much weight around, you can move the sweet spot. And we're not in that game just yet. We still have
a lot of work on
the putters. One thing at a time. But yeah, Carsten Solheim, I mean, he's our hero, and he's who we remember, and he's, we get beat up, man. I mean, people are vicious with new technology, and traditionalists hate new technology, and they try to discredit it, and they try to, talk a bunch of crap about it. And Carsten Solheim did the same as we did. We're just starting to be taken seriously out on tour, amongst the ranks of the putting gurus and all that. But before that, people just straight laughed at us
the exact
same that they did for Carsten Solheim. I mean, he was on a PGA Tour putting green for a couple of years, with people absolutely swearing they would never put something so absurd into play. And lo and behold, 65 years later, that the shape that he made is now the standard of beauty. It's important for us to stay present with that, and it helps us, to have had a pioneer like Carsten sort of go against the grain in the way that he did and have the success that he has is definitely an inspiration for sure.
You just said it, putting and club making is by most considered an art. Mark mentioned his Japanese girlfriend. I've seen her, she's a beauty.
What is it, a Kyoe?
No, it's a Makino, it's a hand forged Makino. And I also have two Yamada, so hand forged. So yeah, I'm a bit of a
wonderful in a glass.
They're so spoiling, they're so spoiling, but they just they don't work. Well, they do.
And I want to be clear, like
they do really work. They can work very, but they need a master's hand, and I'm not a master.
I want to be clear. I still love that stuff. I love looking at pretty putters and. I sure wish that some of the putters I used to use, I still have this like Napa with this perfect patina on it. And I wish it was lie angle balance, cause I love looking at it. And I love walking around with it. I don't like walking around with a branding iron nearly as much, like anybody else, but, unfortunately they just don't work.
Yeah. But, let me continue there with the club making and putting being an art and things like this, and without getting too deep, I mean, how is technology changing how the art is made, or how it's made?
Our technology has inspired massive changes to the art of building a golf club. But the stuff that we're uncovering and developing isn't applicable to anybody else. But there's actually just this morning I was had a meeting with a shaft company that we're working with called TPT. We have very different requirements for a shaft than any other company. You would be absolutely frankly disappointed to know how few shafts are actually straight and round. So for our technology, I mean, that's a huge change that's needed to take place. And the QC standards of the shaft companies that we work with, have all had to elevate their game in order to accommodate our technology. So that's, you know, one piece that changes it. In general, you know, our company aside, you know, I mentioned Gears, but some of these other testing platforms, TrackMan and GC Quad and all of it, have definitely changed what club manufacturers and builders prioritize. There used to be, it used to just be a guessing game, really. You know, you'd and trial and error. You'd put weight here, you'd put weight there.
Right. Take a little lead tape on the back of that TPM, yeah, and boom, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And now, you know, not even just in club making, but in just the whole game in general, the data makes it so much easier to you know, steer a particular fitting in the correct direction without just sort of, you know, firing in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mark, quick nine.
Well, if he's still up to it,
no. It looks like he's ready.
Yeah, as I'm sitting here blowing my nose.
We've sort of oiled his voice. We've got him down to short answers now. You can answer whatever you.
Do I need to pour myself a drink?
What time is it?
Pour yourself a drink if you want.
Absolutely.
February o'clock in or half past 12 or something. Yeah.
5 o'clock somewhere.
February in Oregon cannot be too pretty.
Oh, it's not too bad, actually.
No? Is it?
No.
Oh, there you go. Oh, it's light out.
It's light out.
He's looking at a bloody golf course.
He is on a golf course.
We are on a golf course.
That's a great place to work. Who would you like to play your last round with?
Yeah, there you go.
Who would I like to play my last round with? You know, this, I don't know how this is going to come off, but most of the moments and really special experiences that I've had are by myself. I want to play, I think I'd want to play my last round of golf with the golf gods themselves and with the course itself. I've probably played 75% of all the golf that I've played by myself. It's not that I am antisocial, but my schedule and kids and all the stuff mostly has me, you know, getting to the golf course with about 2.5 hours of daylight left, jumping in a cart, and I don't know if you just saw the mountains in the background there, but there's a golden hour. You know, it stays light, very late here, almost till 10 o'clock. And you get about 9 o'clock, you hit the back nine and the stretch on 12, 13, and 14. The mountains turn purple and the fir trees get lit up. And it's one of the few times for a hyperactive gentleman like myself that I ever find myself capable of just being still. Yeah, maybe that's also me just bailing on trying not to hurt anybody's feelings.
No, don't stop. Don't row back. That was actually quite nice. So you'd be out there with the gods and probably Seneca telling you to that stillness is the key or something like that. What would you be if you hadn't decided to carve a career in the golf industry?
What's that?
A hyperactive gentleman doing what?
I have been in the bar and music business since I was 17, 18. I had a nice career. I was a musician for a while. Still play a little bit, but then I was had my own booking agency for a while. I was a talent buyer for a few music venues, and I still own my own bar here in Eugene. So my
bar
path,
owner.
Yeah.
I got an idea, Frank.
Forget, yeah, absolutely. I mean, forget the putter.
I've got an idea. I don't need putter.
So it's happy hour.
What's the most valuable golf tip you've ever been given?
Most valuable golf tip I have ever been given. Soft hands never doesn't work. Soft hands is always a winner. I would say soft hands.
Like that one. Against all odds, you have won the club championship. You and your mates decide to celebrate in a karaoke bar. What's the first song you'll sing? And how will you close the night? This is the question you will answer.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to force you, but this is the one.
Well, first of all,
we have a playlist. We have a playlist at Spotify. Sorry.
I did win a club championship. We did not celebrate at a karaoke bar, if you can believe it. I mean, I hate to phone this one in, but I think if my mates are there with me, I'll probably have to start the evening off with We Are the Champions.
All right. Okay.
I have to assume that's not an original answer. People have said that before, haven't they?
Yes.
Once or twice.
That's embarrassing. Not really. Then we'll close the evening with. I mean, I'm just, it's because I'm not picturing myself up there alone.
No.
A big ruckus. Bunch of guys enjoying it with me. This one's pretty cheesy too. I hate this question. I understand why you make people answer it. I think I'd probably have to go with Tub Thumping. You know that.
Yes. I get knocked out. Vodka song or whatever it was.
Tub Thumping.
Yeah, I remember that one. It Chubba Wagga Wagga or something.
Chumbawamba.
Yeah, there's a great cover version by They Might Be Giants of that one. I'll send it to you if you want.
I know that cover version of that.
It's fantastic, isn't it? That's better than the original. And because that's the ruckus you were talking about. Like everyone's standing around them, and you've got like these two hyperactive gentlemen in the middle.
Yep.
Okay.
High school band played that song. We had a hockey team that did pretty well, and there was a big celebration for their performance one year, and we played that song on an ice rink, that was definitely top five best musical moments of my life.
There you go.
That is a fantastic song. I really like that one. Thank you. Do you sometimes dream of golf? Do you sometimes dream of golf? And if yes, are they good or bad dreams? And would you share?
I'm one that, you know, I weed is legal here in Oregon, so I don't remember my dreams very often. but I've had a couple of golf dreams. They're not usually like me playing. I've had a handful of dreams about like repping or making putters for guys or some of that kind of stuff that definitely I wouldn't say they're bad dreams, but they're not usually good. I usually get pretty anxious.
Right, okay, but that's not your classic golfing nightmare where you're unable to pull back the club or all that stuff. Great. What's the most horrendous thing that's ever happened to you on a golf course?
The most horrendous thing, I'll be honest, man, top three anyway, just happened last week. I was fortunate enough to get to play with Adam Scott at Los Angeles Country Club, which is going to be this year's U.S. Open site.
So I've heard, yeah.
I used to play golf in a with a psychotically strong left-hand grip. And I played that way my whole life and very successfully and was a very good shot maker. And then my body just wouldn't allow for it anymore. I had elbow troubles and wrist troubles and all kinds of stuff. And so last 18 months, I've been trying to kind of, relearn a kind of a new way to move the golf club. And it's been going pretty good. But then as soon as this, opportunity with Adam came up, I was like, really started to realize like, holy shit, my game sucks right now. So did what, any classic golfing idiot would do and went down the rabbit hole with some lessons and worked myself into a complete frenzy and then showed up at LACC. And actually, the first tee was intense. The first tee is literally on the putting green. Like you actually put your tee in the physical putting green. And there was a bunch of other PGA guys around because, they were all there checking out the venue prior to Riviera. And I smoked it. I drove it right down the middle, tight little fade, was only about 15 or 20 yards behind Adam, which, for a little fellow like myself, wasn't so bad. Played a couple of good holes, and then the middle of the third fairway, I shanked one, like straight up, caught one right off the hosel,
boom,
dead lateral into the bushes, and then I threw down another ball. I hit it in the bunker short of the green, and then of course Adam, being you know as kind as he is, goes over to the bushes and starts looking for my ball, and unfortunately finds it. So, so now I'm hacking it out under the bush. You know, my heart is beating out of my chest. I dump that one in the bunker after my punch out too. I skull the bunker shot. I hit the next one past the hole and tap in for a crowd pleasing, you know, fuck, I don't know, 15. And then I never recovered. The rest of the round was just an absolute catastrophe. I shanked another one. And meanwhile, I don't shank the ball. Like I have all never kinds did. Of misses. I have all kinds of misses like everybody else does. And I've been fortunate enough that a shank ain't one of them. So I was absolutely lost. I had no idea. And it was by the time we got to the back nine, that's as much trouble as I've ever had pulling the golf club back in my entire life. But I drove it good and I putted good, which, you know, since I'm his putter guy, that's all that really matters. But yeah, it was not particularly close to shooting an 83 in front of a Masters champion on a US Open golf course was not my favorite moment.
Oh, that's a great story. Is he really that nice? Because I've always liked him because he was around. He was a young player as I started. I came to the game really late. I was in my late 20s as I started to play, and Adam Scott was already around. And he's always come across like a tremendously lovely person.
He's absolutely.
So he'll crawl into the bushes to find your ball, which isn't really nice, is it? You know.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a dick move, if I'm totally honest. Like. Yeah, I mean, we were playing a little game. Maybe it was like that competitive, but I don't know. No, he is at least as kind as he is perceived publicly. The opportunity to work with him, you know, I've met them all at this point, and I've met their agents and I've met their caddies, and the totality of not just him but his team they're brilliant. They are genuine. They are very smart. Everyone, Adam and everyone that he surrounds himself with are extremely intelligent people who have been very deliberate about managing his time, emotions, and physicality as well as anyone on tour. You know, and it's about time that he's starting to kind of get these accolades as people are starting to like really add up the numbers of his career. And it's extraordinary. I mean, it's an unbelievable career to have stayed where he has stayed for, I mean, I think he's been outside the top 50 once in 20 years. I mean, that's ludicrous.
That's an achievement, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh, yeah. And if you look, you know, the way he's managed his body, I mean, he's 43 years old and he's moving the golf club. Like, I mean, he doesn't optimize his driver the way that a lot of these guys do because he knows what he can and can't do. So he hits down on it a little bit. So he doesn't get the full mileage out of his driver, but he's still moving the golf ball 180 miles an hour. And, you know, as we all see every time he tees it up, effortlessly. Yes, he is super nice, incredibly intelligent. One of my favorite things about Adam is that he loves golf. And a lot of these guys, you know, particularly when they've been around, the last thing they want to talk about when they're out playing a casual round is golf. They want to talk about anything else. And he's not. He's like us. He's a, you know, an equipment nerd, and he's a golf swing guru, and he's always searching and just truly loves the game. He loves golf courses. He loves competing. He loves the feeling of a good shot. He's a true disciple of the game of golf.
Wonderful. We need him on the show. You can choose from all players in the history of the game. You have a 13 put, sorry, try again. You have a 13 foot putt at Oakmont Country Club to win. Who would you choose to make it? Multiple answers are possible.
If I can pick any player from any era.
Yeah.
I mean, does anybody not pick Tiger 2000?
And that's why I say
you should start saying you can't pick Tiger 2000.
Tiger's off the board.
So Tiger's off the board because multiple are mandatory. Multiple answers are mandatory, okay?
Multiple answers mandatory. Right now, I would say it would be a toss-up between, like in today's game, the guys that are actively playing out there, Cam Smith, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay. Pat in particular, my goodness, watching him putt, I've watched him practice quite a bit, and it's absolutely pure. The ball roll is absolutely pure. He's an exceptional green reader. His pace, my favorite thing about him, even more than Xander and Cam, he hits his putts hard. I love
he wants seeing them that. In.
I
he, does, totally. He doesn't and tickle I, them in. It's just like
totally. And I love seeing that. I love seeing him hit the back of the hole. And it's you know, when you see somebody, you know, when you can like take, you know, five different putts that they're hitting and put them all, you know, on a screen next to each other, and within a millisecond, you know, the routine is exactly the same every time. That's when you know that putting is in their veins in a way that it just isn't for everybody else. Not to mention the fact that the dude is ice cold, you know, on the golf course. So I wouldn't worry about his nerves or anything like that. So hitting a 13-footer to save my life.
There you go.
Music on the very quick answers, please. Okay, yes. Music on the range.
Yeah, I'm starting to come around.
Match play or stroke play?
Match.
Walk or ride?
Ride. I'm so lazy.
My warm favorite up or not?
We've got here. I have a golf cart here at Emerald Valley that goes 30 miles an hour. It's like my most cherished material possession that I've ever had in my life.
So you play 18 holes in one and a half hours after.
1 hour. If there's nobody on the golf course, I can play in 1 hour.
There you go.
All right. Okay. What's a gimme?
Oof, I should get my sales director in this call because we had a bit of a thing. A gimme is a putt I don't want to see somebody miss.
So it's basically an act of kindness.
Yeah, an act of kindness, and also, you know, I'm a guilt-driven fellow, you know. I don't want to go home with an extra $10 in my pocket because some jackass missed an 18-inch putt. So.
I love you. Do you know what a mulligan is? Do you give them or take them?
I certainly don't take them. I should say, if I haven't warmed up and my playing partners haven't warmed up, I am a firm believer in the breakfast ball.
All right, okay.
On the first tee only. And then, yeah, you know, if somebody's depends upon the nature of the round. If it's a silly hit and giggle and I got somebody that's a 15-20 handicap and you know, they're looking to you to get permission to throw a ball down. And so, yes, I'm happy to oblige.
Just your game, okay? Driver or putter?
Putter by a million.
You know, I think you already answered that question three or four times this evening. Yeah,
horrendous driver of the ball.
Playing in a one-club tournament, what club would you take?
By seven.
Yeah, yeah. Worst piece of golf equipment you have ever purchased? You know, the thing you really love to hate. You know, that why the hell did I buy that piece of shite?
I mean, I was able to return it, so I can't do it. But I just remember the Nike Covert. I was driving it bad. I went to the local store here. Total, like, just standard issue idiot purchase. Like, it was having this incredible, you know, driving range session at the store, you know, smoking this thing, wrong shaft, wrong loft, wrong everything, but it was going good. Bought it and went out to the golf course, and it was definitely the worst piece of the golf equipment that I've ever used in my life. Do you know that the single biggest jump in PGA Tour driving distance average that's taken place It's not the ball. It hasn't been the club advantages, any of that. It was when Nike got out of the driver business. And when 20 guys no longer had to play Nike driver, the tour driving distance average went up a significant amount.
This is the kind of stuff we're looking for in the show. This is exactly the kind of stuff.
That was a great way to end the quick nine. Thank you very much, Sam. That was brilliant.
Definitely the way. Did you guys invent the revealer?
So the revealer is actually what gave birth to the technology. The revealer was first.
Oh.
Yep. So the guy who invented the tech, I didn't invent the tech. The guy's name is Bill Pressey. Bill Pressey the fourth. He is a brilliant dude. He has worked in every aspect of the golf business. He's been a rep. He's been a builder. He's been an instructor. He's been a tour player. And like so many guys out there, he hit the ball well enough to compete at an extremely high level, but just couldn't putt well. So he was messing around. This is before the anchor band with what was called a tricep lock. So if you can imagine it, this went up underneath the forearm. You guys can see it, but
he's got putters in his office, of course.
This one's underneath the forearm like an arm lock, but then outside here to where the top of the shaft was actually touching the tricep. So he was going like this, and then the shaft, he sort of let go of the putter, and the shaft like stuck to his skin right here. And he noticed that the head just flopped open. And so he thought to himself, well, that ain't right. So built a device to sort of check how a putter just – he wasn't even trying to deal with it in motion. He was just trying to get a putter to just sit properly at address. So he built eventually the first revealer out of a crutch and some fishing wire and going around all night with this, and then started putting other putters in this crutch. None of them did what he assumed that they should be doing. And then he grabbed it was a Big Ben Baby Ben, which was sort of like an anvil shaped but it was actually when
Bettinardi Bettinardi built it for Ben Hogan. I've got one in my cellar.
Correct. It was same. I love that putter. It was
me too.
Jim Furyk won the 2003 U.S. Open with it. But so Bill got one of those, and he just started drilling holes all over that Bettinardi putter to try and find a spot that he could stick a shaft to get the thing to stay square. And that was the beginning of it.
That's fast. That's unbelievable. His name is Bill Pressey.
Yes.
Yeah. And your putters have this press grip, right, where it like moves the hands are automatically the little forward press.
Correct.
But when I watched the videos on your website with Rick Shields and who else was on, I don't know who else was on. Did I see that correctly, that that whether you hit it off the toe or the heel, it still goes the same way?
Right. Particularly, I mean, it depends upon the model. With the directed force, yes.
Right.
The directed force is, excuse me while I blow my nose, listeners enjoy.
Please.
The directed force, from strictly technically speaking, is the best putter in the world. Obviously looks and feel do have some impact on performance. That's where I think some would say that the directed force falls short, but strictly speaking in performance, it's incredible. The size, the weight, everything about it, makes it the most forgiving putter that's ever been used. You can hit it literally anywhere on the face. You're not going to experience any directional dispersion whatsoever. Nor are you going to lose any speed. And for me, that was where, I started experiencing seriously, extraordinary results, was that on lag putting, nobody hits the center of the face from 30 feet. I don't care how good you are. You may, but you're certainly not going to do it consistently. And we're not talking about much. I mean, you're talking about a quarter of an inch less. And on other putters, that's going to impact the direction and the speed. Right. And with ours, it doesn't. And so I started, all of a sudden, I started making 30 footers and 40 footers a couple times around. And that's what really sold me on the tech.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, fast downhill putts, we used to putt off the toe intentionally, that's how,
That's one of my favorite comments that we get is like, you know, when I do that demonstration where I'm hitting putts with the revealer, you know, out on the edge of the toe and the ball's still going in, and some guy's like, well, I like to hit my, you know, my downhill putts off the toe. It's like, don't.
They would teach you that. I remember they would teach, you know, I grew up playing in Long Island on a links course, and every downhill putt, you know, hit it off the toe, hit it off the toe, hit it off the toe, you know.
Just don't hit it so hard.
Exactly. Now, your clubs are available only on your website.
No. We're available all over the world. They're sold at all PGA Tour superstores. We actually just partnered with Golf Galaxy. We're really excited. Those will be shipping at the end of the month here, starting with select locations, and then hopefully by this summer they'll be available at all Golf Galaxies, and then probably. I would imagine somewhere near 1,000 different other green grass facilities, brick and mortar shops, mom and pop shops, stuff like that.
Pro shops.
It's important to have them available. People need to touch and feel.
There's a few shops here in Germany. I think you can get them. There's a few fitting agents you have. There's someone down in Switzerland. I think you can quite easily find that on your homepage.
If you click on fitting at the top of the homepage, right, you just plug in your address and you can see what's near you.
These manufacture independent fitters, that's really bullshit, isn't it? They're not independent.
Say again?
The manufacture independent fitters. They're like, oh, you know, I mean, I'll fit. I'm not hooked into any specific manufacturer.
I mean, it depends. There are some that are truly agnostic. I mean, I do appreciate a lot of these, you know, sort of the higher end fitting agencies like TruSpec and Cool Clubs and Club Champion. We partner with Club Champion and have for a few years, and it's been an incredible partnership.
Right.
They are brand agnostic. But yeah, sure. There's certain clubs where, you know that they get kickbacks for pushing X amount of putters. Historically, those people just don't reach out to us. And I do love it when we do get somebody who's, you know, got a contract with somebody, you know, a teaching pro that's got a contract with somebody, and, you know, they say like, don't tell anybody, but I use your putter and I give your putter to all my customers. And, it's different. They're all different.
Yeah. Capacity wise, you guys are the sky's the limit. I mean, I'm obviously not, but when you're talking about all these outlets,
it's a thing. You know, there's no way to mass produce our putter. Every single one of them has to be hand balanced. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people that really need to be trained very well. And I mean, just there's, you know, we made very aggressive projections as to what was going to happen this year, and 2 months into the year, they've already been exceeded. And so we're needing to move very quickly, but, you know, we need roughly four or five times the number of builders per unit than our competitors do. So growth is a challenge, but we're working on it. I mean, we had, gosh, I think 3 years ago, I want to say there was seven of us, eight of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're up to 35 now. By the end of this year, I imagine we'll have close to 50 employees. So we're working on it. The building that we just moved into definitely gives us the space. We got a huge building, and as you guys just saw, right next to a golf course. So we're hoping to attract some golf nuts to come in and build our putters for us.
There you go. I mean, it is a huge story.
You have a training program. Can I apply?
Yeah, absolutely.
For what? As what, Mark?
As a builder. No. You know, you'll probably teach me how to build them. You know, it's only screws, Frank.
Well, yes.
Well, that's all there is to it.
Absolutely. But please do check out labgolf.com is the website. I do want to say one thing, you know, and I've read comments that about the price of these putters. You know, they start, I think, $400 somewhere in that area, the standard ones, and, you know, go up with the thing. And, you know, people are told, why am I spending $400 on a putter, blah, blah, blah. Sure. These are the same people that spend $600 on a driver.
That yeah, isn't they, that complete bullshit? Yeah,
that they use half as much.
Yeah, isn't that completely shite? You know, most of these people will hit a driver 3, 4, 5, 10 times around, and then twice because they'll be losing the first ball. And they'll be hitting 33 putts or 40 putts. You know, I've always thought it's the best invest you can do is
I will give those folks some credit in the sense that when, and I know this because and it sounds like you've had the same experience. Switching a putter on a given round changes everything. and switching a driver in a given round doesn't. In fact, it kind of goes the other way. Getting a new driver dialed in, if you were to use a new one each round, is a different thing. So I understand, you know, when you're looking at putters as sort of a consumable product, to where you're going to buy two or three a year because you're a crazy person like I was, you know, spending that kind of money is significant. I do my best on the comment threads to address it. A lot of the general golf consumer I think has experienced, really starting with TaylorMade and the TP line back in sort of 05, 06, followed by PXG, it would be very, very difficult for the average consumer not to feel like they're just getting gouged. That they're not charging based on what they're worth or what they cost, but rather charging on what based on what people are willing to pay. And, you know, I use the TaylorMade example with the TP line in the early 2000s is that, you know, when they first started that, they thought that there was, you know, one out of every 300 golfers that was going to be willing to spend $700 on a driver. And they found out that everybody was, you know, if it said that it was better, if there was, if there was a sticker that said this one's, you know, 1% better, we'll buy it. And that really changed the industry. We are not those people, you know, as I just mentioned, the amount of staff that we need to build our putters, the quality of material that we need to use in order to meet our tolerances, to balance them, the amount of engineering and research and development that we require in order to push the technology forward. The fact that like we need to make our own grips, we need to make our own screws. Like these are not things that you can just buy at the store or buy from different Chinese manufacturers in order to just plug into your putter and get going. And so the putters that the prices that we charge truly are the lowest margin that we can accept and still keep the doors open and still keep doing it. We're always working to make it cheaper. Right. One of the things that we always talk about is that. And this is the same with any company, needing to separate price tiers so that you can sell your putters wholesale to a PGA Tour superstore or, you know, a Golf Galaxy and also leave them a margin, you know, to be able to make a few bucks drives the price. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that's why PXG ultimately did what they did is that they got, you know, they saturated the market of people willing to spend $5,000 on an iron set. And then when sales started to fall off, they needed to cut the price. And the only way that they were able to do that was by cutting out the middleman. So they go direct to consumer only. We've talked about, you know, embracing a direct to consumer only model, but it's not going to happen that we can see in the foreseeable future, if at all, because we love our retail partners and we love that, you know, this is not just a product, you know, we need people out there spreading the gospel and the people who are going out of their way to spread the gospel for us are entitled to make a few bucks on us.
And they are fitting, aren't they? You know, your Absolutely. Retail partners fit. So they're basically our partners. They're not just people who will unwrap the box and say, okay, here's the putter, take it. And then,
Absolutely.
So they are active part of the production process, aren't they?
Correct. And the only thing that even keeps us considering the possibility that we would ever be able to do a direct to consumer thing is that we can fit in house. You know, you guys have, I think both done the remote fitting but we have a remote fitting process that would enable it. But again, we'd much rather be partnering with people to have just goodwill around the world. The company has grown the way that it has because of extreme loyalty and really beautiful friendships and relationships that we have with people that have taken a chance on pushing the world's ugliest putter.
Yeah, no, I think they're very sexy, and I have to say that money is only an issue in the absence of value, and I think
money only an issue in the absence of beauty. Oh, sorry. Okay, no. I'm with you, Sam. I'm
with you. I think they're gorgeous. I love it, especially the red one.
Jesus Christ. Work.
Jesus Christ! I mean, you know, this is the red ones. They come in different colors, and they look like. I don't know. I think they're beautiful.
Beauty is what makes the ball go in, man. I mean, like the director, of course, I think you see it on a shelf. Nobody's going to be like, huh, I want to try that one. And I'm sure my friends won't make fun of me for that. But then you start seeing them go in the middle and it's like, you know, I do like the way this is contoured and sort of shaped, and
you're going to putt it beautifully. It'll start being beautiful if you know if it's just like as long as it works, it'll become beautiful.
That was one of our taglines for early on was "Beauty's at the bottom of the cup."
Oh,
fantastic! What famous last words, nearly.
What famous last words? Well, I hope that Charles's win yesterday does for you what you hope it will. We certainly look forward to following the story. I think it's fantastic. I would bet the ranch that there are irons coming at some point in the future.
I wouldn't hold your breath too long on that one.
Give us a call when you.
I don't have a ranch.
Give us a call when you're launching.
Give us a call, exactly. Sam, thank you so much for taking the time early in the morning in Oregon. Is it Oregon or Oregon?
Oregon.
Oregon. Huh. Interesting. Give our best to the Pacific Northwest. Maybe we'll see you over here in the fatherland, selling some putters one day. And you're certainly welcome to come along and show us how you still bang it out there.
Past us both.
There you go.
Thank you guys very much for having me. It's a cool show you guys got. I appreciate the line of question.
It was wonderful. Thank you very much for coming on.
I'm going to go listen to Chumbawamba right now. Thanks for that.
Version from They Might Be Giants. I'm not sure if I can find that in Spotify.
Can I make clear that I do have very sophisticated, exceptional taste in music. Two of the cheesiest damn songs in the history of music. I just want people to know that I'm cooler than that. The question was about a damn karaoke bar.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don't worry. Everyone knows you now, Sam. Right.
What do you play? Guitar? Taste of
piano. And
there you go. Well, then the question should have been, what would you play with your band? Then maybe that would have been different.
I mean, all that. I didn't want to sound like, you know, too big of an elitist douchebag. I would have ended up, you know, naming songs that nobody's heard of. But
what's something like from Genesis or something like that?
Genesis. I hope we've heard of Genesis. If not, we need to do a better job of educating our children.
We do. Sir, thank you again. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next week with who, Mark?
I've already forgotten. There's so many favorite people.
The editor of Golf Punk magazine, yes, I believe it is.
It's the editor of Golf Punk magazine.
There you go.
Jan Langenbein.
A German.
A German. Very much looking forward to that show. My name is Mark Horiner.
My name is Frank Forster. Sam, thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.